We are joined again by the wonderful Mr. Serverless, Jeff Holland. And fun fact about Jeff, he was once on the Ellen Show. that needs repeating. And we're also joined by the incredible, I am so excited to welcome Marie Hoger. She is a software engineer on Azure Functions. So again, if you enjoy using Azure Functions, these are two of the people that you should absolutely thank. And of course, give them a warm round of applause. They're going to be talking about best practices in Azure Functions, and I cannot wait for this session to begin. So over to both of you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much, Simona. Marie, I'm thrilled to be on this with you. If folks don't know, we do a monthly team webcast. We just did one like a week ago. Marie showed up and legit just stole the show. I just checked last night, Marie, at like the YouTube comment, and someone just like yesterday commented, they're like, that was so much fun following along on this demo. So when I found out I got the chance to be on this with you, folks need to check that out.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't have any live coding today. I'm just kind of showing. Yeah, but I am going to call you out a little bit more. So I hope folks can look forward to that.
That is fair. And this is a good session around best practices, especially because I have the habit as a PM that I will go in front of a conference or a virtual event and I'll say, like, do serverless for everything. Not very good at programming, but I'm very passionate about functions. REA on the dev side has to deal with all of the ramifications of that, actually customers doing things correctly and opening support tickets. So Maria, this is our chance to set the record straight and let people know this is the best way to do stuff. So anything top of mind, I guess, as we start off for the next session.
Definitely. So I think kind of like the structure we were thinking about doing is like going over like kind of three main categories of things that you should keep in mind for best practices. The first one is like during development, and then the next is deployment and scale. And then the last one is troubleshooting. And so we're going to try to kind of like hit a lot of topics, but hopefully like the goal of the session is to give you something to like keep in mind as you're developing at each point. So I think first topic, development. The first thing I think that Jeff also is definitely pushing for is like, first of all, start with local development, for sure. And let's see, Jeff, I can actually just show something right now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so starting with local development, and then if y'all don't already use the VS Code extension, it's amazing. So highly recommend.
That is like best practice one. I'm even looking at some of your notes. It's like, do local development, like the portal. It's okay if you want to kick the tires a little bit when you're trying things out, but as soon as you're done just looking around, like if you're at this point in our virtual conference, you've shown a level of interest, you should really take some time to set up that local dev experience. It's going to help you out in the long run for sure.
Yeah, totally agreed. All right. So here is also, if you haven't seen it, here's kind of what the functions VS Code extension looks like. You can initialize a project, you can add a new function, and it has all of our great templates here. So like whenever I start developing a function, this is always where I come to first. The other kind of like best practice slash also tip that was kind of inspired by conversations with other folks in the serverless community is the fact that you can use multiple output bindings and input bindings. So the quick example that I have here today is going to be using an HTTP trigger with HTTP response, a blob output, and a queue output. And so kind of the cool pattern that you can do here is we have an HTTP response where like user uploads some content, we store it in a blob, and then we also pass like a queue message that says, hey, this is the reference to the blob that I want to process and do some like, you know, kind of cool operations on. So this is also really great for if your transformation process takes a long time. That's kind of like one of the tips too of best practice. You want to keep your function executions kind of shorter and more bite-sized. And so here's kind of a way to show doing that. If we transition over here, now we have a different function that is taking in the queue with this blob input, blob output. And so basically it is taking in the queue message, it retrieves from the queue message, it retrieves the name of that blob and then like inputs it into your function. And then you can put it in a processed queue or processed like container.
This is great. This is a good tip. And I'm going to throw a question out here, Marie. Something I hear a few times around bindings. Is there a recommended, like, when should I be using bindings and when maybe, like in these examples where you're sending blob, maybe you're using output bindings. How should I think about when bindings is the right thing and maybe when I should be using the SDK, or does it matter either way?
Yeah, great question. So the input and output binding, like right now for JavaScript, is kind of like a simple like read or write operation. And so there are sometimes cases where you need to do something more complicated. So an example is like with the Cosmos DB binding. Sure, read and write is great, but maybe I need to do like a delete or something, right? And so in those cases, for the input and output bindings, we would actually probably say, like, go ahead and use those SDKs instead of relying on the input output bindings. Triggers are kind of a different story, where triggers will always kind of be the path forward. Like, you don't want to have a timer triggered function that like queries for new queue messages or something like that. So like, do not use the SDK for sure. But I think that's a really good call out too. I think some people will try to be like, okay, like I'm trying to do all of this crazy complicated stuff with just like the bindings. But again, if it's like beyond a read and write, at that point, just like, you know, the path forward is the SDK itself.
That's great. And while we're looking at this app view, before we start to move to some of the things like scale or troubleshooting, there's a lot of thoughts around this app concept. It is unique to Azure Functions in the serverless world that we give you this function app. So anything that folks should think about with that concept about how they should treat or think about what this app means and how it means for how I'm developing however many functions I might stick in my app.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I think we were talking about kind of like best practices, and one of the ways to frame thinking about those best practices is to understand what a function app is. And so in this project, I actually have a third function that is both of these functions. They have different triggers, but they're using the same core logic. And that's coming from over here. And they're also sharing the same node modules. And so thinking about it that way, like for starters, you can do this pattern, right, of like having two different triggers on the same kind of core logic. And then the other part of that is whenever an instance is deployed, we're going to dynamically scale those instances. But you should remember that like it's not like each individual function with each individual like trigger scaling independently. They're all going to scale together. And so one thing that comes up with that is like how many functions should your function app have? Of course, we can't give you like a hard number of like no more than 10 or something, because it totally depends on what your functions do and how executing in the same environment might interact with each other. The other thing that kind of like, again, thinking about this app model is one instance, when it's up, it's going to be handling a lot of different function executions, maybe just for the same function. But one pattern that we see is if you don't use connection pooling, or say like you instantiate a new connection client per execution. I think when you just look at it in terms of like the here's my index.ts or JS, and here's my function JSON, it can be super easy to think like, oh yeah, like the whole environment just goes away after that execution. But remember that those things persist, but you cannot guarantee their persistence if you try to like save state or something like that.
Yeah, that's great. It's easy to think about when you're writing these things that a single execution just kind of appears and then disappears independently on its own. But it's helpful that's not actually happening, and that, you know, you have an app that gets initialized and it will actually hang around and process maybe multiple requests at the same time. And so be a little bit more efficient in how you're creating clients or reusing clients. I think that's a great call out. Okay, so we got about 7 minutes. I know there's a bit here about like once this app is running and you go ahead and publish the thing, like now it is running. Now we are doing the scale thing and there's, you know, different hosting options we have. There's different ways it scales. Best practices top of mind here, Marie?
Yeah, definitely. So let's see, I'll skip ahead real quick. But one thing to note is like that consumption-based scaling, where we consume or, you know, create or shut down instances based off of the incoming requests. And of course, that comes with it cold start. So kind of like the three main points I wanted to hit is knowing your load, knowing your latency requirements, and knowing your platform needs. So those are kind of like really generic things to think about. So breaking that down a little bit, load is thinking about, is your workload unpredictable and spiky, or is it more consistent and constant? Because sometimes that we've actually seen, if you have a pre-provisioned environment, which you can also do with Azure Functions, then you actually like end up saving on some money if you have like a constant stream of queue messages to process or something like that. If your workload is more unpredictable and spiky, that's where like that consumption dynamic elastic scale, that's where it really shines. So thinking about what your load is going to look like is super important. And then here's kind of like, yeah, these are like the plans whenever you choose to deploy that will support that elastic scaling.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way I think about this often too is start with consumption. Like don't like it's totally going to work for a bunch of people. But is if you find out there's something there, like Maria called out a bunch of good stuff, like, hey, cold start, or do I actually care about cost for reserve stuff? And then you can start to peel back and say, like, okay, well, maybe I want the premium tier, or maybe it goes all the way to like, I need this thing to run on premises, so I'm going to choose the Kubernetes flavory thing. But often you can kind of start simple, but know that you have room to grow and you have options where you can make those trade-offs and choices.
Yeah, totally. And Jeff, you already kind of hit it. Just to summarize a little bit again, like is a latency requirement? Do you have that? Like, is any cold start okay? So you might be looking at either like a dedicated plan or like the Elastic Premium plan. If you're just like, I can never have cold start in my code. And so then the last one too that Jeff you also touched on is platform needs. So do you want a managed environment or a high degree of control? And we have a lot of different options kind of on a sliding scale to say that, like, I want maybe like, you know, VNet integration. So we're looking more at like the premium or dedicated plan. Or maybe like I have like a really, like, I need to use a Docker image because I have this like really specific requirement. Okay, so you're probably looking more at like, you know, deploying through a Docker image like on a premium plan or something like that.
Yeah, that's perfect. And Maria, we've got about 3 or 4 minutes here. I'll kind of leave it. I know we talked a little bit about CI/CD. We talked a little bit about troubleshooting. Any topics that you specifically are just like burning that you want to run with, and we can go in that direction?
Yeah, totally. So one last super quick tip, and this is a little selfish because it helps with our deflection, but troubleshooting. So
oh yeah.
So where to, like, for one, that you can look at the Azure Functions repo, and we're open source. So this like little table gives you a really nice rundown of if you're experiencing issues in different areas, where to file those issues. The thing that I really, really wanted to highlight is in the Azure portal, there's this diagnose and solve pane. And so you can run all of these different kind of dashboards and queries. And like as a little background, like our team develops all of these queries kind of based off of our own investigations into issues. And so like here, I have a bad async pattern. So I'm doing async void, which is going to cause a lot of scale problems. And so this is like a super, super good tool. And we're always updating this with the latest dashboards to really help give you kind of like personalized guidance, so like availability and performance. So please check out the diagnose and solve pane is my
that very much advice. It's a almost hidden tab. It's there, at least I don't think about it a whole lot, but Mario is totally right. It's actually really cool how these things are developed, and that as we're getting support tickets and as we're trying to make sure things are working, we're building all these tools to go and analyze your function and to help give us a clue of like, oh, this, they've misconfigured this, and just keep it for ourselves. We expose the majority of them right here in diagnose and solve. So you can go through and click through and have it analyze and or look at our telemetry and look at the platform stuff. So absolutely a good to go. If something seems off, clicking through and seeing if maybe something we built is doing it. And these are popping up all of the time too. So it's very likely that if you use this thing 6 months ago, there's probably like three or four new detectors or what we call them that are floating around there now. So that's a really good pro tip and something that might actually be news to a bunch of people watching.
Yeah, love it.
Great. Okay. So I'm checking time. I think we are right at the spot. And so I just want to say, Mari, thank you again. And I'll just let you know, there is more gushing about this webcast. So I you know, I'm a bit of an egotistical person. I don't know if we're going to let you on the webcast again. but you also crushed it here a ton for rocking through a bunch of these best practices, very clearly communicated, a lot of good stuff. So thanks a ton for joining. Anything else you want to plug or mention before we pass it over to Simona to take us to the next session?
I think that's about it. Yeah. Thanks so much, everyone.
Yeah. Thank you all very much. It's been a blast chatting.
Amazing. Oh my God. I loved it. I had no idea. One of the screens that I absolutely love is a troubleshooting one. I'm so glad that you showed that one, Mari. And I know that it's been evolving so fast over the past 6 months and 1 year, and it's always a very useful screen to have a look at. And I had no idea that it was connected to the Azure Functions GitHub repository. So it sounds like the two are connected, and we're getting from those issues, we're getting intelligence into our portal. That's really, really awesome. And a good reminder for everyone else on this stream as well, that Azure Functions Runtime and many other extensions are open source, and you can log issues on GitHub and check out all the code, submit your pull requests. I know that we have quite a number of community contributors to some of these extensions, and it's so great to see all this code in GitHub as well. A reminder to everyone here, if you want to have a conversation with Jeff and Marie, please check out the office hours on Dev2. Leave your insights, your knowledge, your questions there. They're delighted to join you there. Also, Jeff, just want to mention, we invited Marie 2 months ago to the stream, so it happened here first.
you saw the talent. You saw the talent even before blowing away that webcast. Yep.
I'm gonna get all red here.
Yeah. we're probably gonna. There has to be a Chris and Chris show and the Jeff and Marie show.
Sign me up. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it. Awesome. Thank you both for sharing all these awesome tips. I'll see you in a bit, waving again. You are all amazing. And warm a round of applause from everyone from the stream for Jeff and Marie. Check out the resources that they have shared, and make sure to follow some of the best practices that they have followed as well. They have shared as well.